for you today. Executions are ugly events, almost as ugly as the crimes from which they are born. As such, I could tell you that it would be better to close your eyes now, to turn away when the points of the blades pierce the black hearts of these criminals before us. The king rolls his shoulders back, chin tilting, voice gaining strength. But that is the coward's way. Instead, we must watch. We must observe. To remind us of everything that has been built under the blessed rule of the Demon King. A rule that I share with each and every one of you, because it is only together, demons and humans, good citizens of all 8 provinces, working alongside one another in peace and alliance, with all in their rightful place, that we can keep our kingdom strong. While the crowd cheers at this, I grind my jaw. With all in their rightful place? I know exactly where he believes Paper Cast's place to be. When an attack like the one masterminded by these anarchists occurs, the king continues, shouting to be heard over the noise, it is an affront to our unity, to the world we have built so tirelessly over these past 2 centuries, with our blood and sweat and tears and hope. And we must come together in that very unity to bring down those who try to destroy us. He clasps 2 fists, raises them to the sky. Today we demonstrate that ours is a power that cannot be broken. The noise of the crowd mounts, almost violent, a deep, wild roar. Ren and I don't join in, but I spot Aoki's shining face at the front of the viewing platform, her fists raised in the air with the others. It hits me like a punch to the gut. When the crowd has finally calmed down, the king strides up to the assassins. He bends down to face them. You failed, he says simply. They don't react. But just as he's about to turn away, the assassin that was giving the wolf trouble earlier pulls on his binds, neck arced upward, and spits in the king's face. The crowd bellows. I brace myself, expecting the king to shout or strike the man. But his expression is composed. Calmly, he wipes his face with the back of one sleeve and smooths down his robes. Then he settles back onto the throne, his face cold, his voice colder. Executioners, prepare your weapons. The crocodile, fox, and wolf soldiers pick up their swords, the crowd's braying growing louder. Each gian is long and thin with a jeweled hilt. The blades glint silver in the lowering light as the soldiers step behind the assassins to clear the view for the king. It's almost dusk. As the sun dips beyond the palace walls, braziers around the stage burst suddenly into light, illuminating the scene in an eerie parallel of the attack on the theater. Wind whips the flames sideways. I taste smoke in the air. Shaking, I clutch Ren's hand tighter. The soldiers draw back their swords. The king raises his hand. Strike! I shut my eyes, but it's too late. The image of the blades disappearing into the men's torsos is there, a searing stain on the back of my eyelids. When I finally dare to look again, the assassins are slumped over, swords lanced through their chests. Along with wearing black, the king sent out the order that we are not to make the sky god's salute to bless the assassin's souls as they rise to the heavenly kingdom. But the crowd is packed tight, so Ren and I make the sign with our free hands, her left, my right, our thumbs crossing together, palms turned out. All around comes cheering and shouting, but though the king is talking, I don't hear a word. I can't tear my eyes away from the assassins. The Jian sticking up from their backs like three broken spines, and blood blooming across their clothes, winding down to paint the floor with ribbons of deep scarlet. The way they've collapsed is reminiscent of fallen dolls, discarded by their petulant owner. Ren's heartbeat throbs against my palm, keeping time as anger rises within me. Hotter and fiercer than fear, stronger and surer than anything I've ever felt before. And as we stand hand in hand amidst the scream and bray of the crowd, there is no doubt when I promise myself that I will not give the king the chance to discard us. One day, we are the ones who will be discarding him. I go to Ren's room late that night, the house wrapped in post-midnight hush. She's awake when I come in, sitting up like she's been expecting me. She opens her arms, and we lie under the blankets, limbs entwined. But it's not enough to stop the trembling, the wildness that's been rattling through me ever since the execution. Ren is the one to break the silence, her breath tickling my hair. She fans her hands across my shoulder blades and says, "I heard something about the assassins." "What?" I murmur, face pressed into her neck. "They were allied with the court. There are rumors that Steel and Moon officials were involved too, and guards." The news buoys me. "Why didn't the king say anything?" "Because it would betray his weakness. It would be admitting he's vulnerable within his own palace, that there are those who defy him even within his own court." "There are," I say, fingers threading with hers as I lift my chin to kiss her. "Us." The shadows are deep when I leave Ren's room. I head to the bathing courtyard to splash some water on my face. The memory of blood and gleaming blades still clings to my skin like dirt. But at the entrance to the courtyard, I stop. A girl is sitting on the steps. Moonlight catches on slender shoulders, the sheen of long, straight hair. The girl is hunched over, crying. It's barely audible, but I'd recognize the stifled sound of it anywhere. What I don't believe at first is who is doing the crying. I pad forward, tentatively. "Blue?" She jerks round at my voice, clamoring to her feet at once. "Go away, Nine," she hisses. Her usual scathing tone is dampened by tears. Her eyes are swollen, red-rimmed, but she doesn't wipe her tears away, as if ignoring them would make them disappear. Gods. She's so obstinate, she'll even defy herself. "No," I say. She looks as though I'd struck her. "I know you hate me," I go on, standing my ground. "And I'm not really that keen on you either. But you're hurting. You shouldn't have to go through this alone. No one should." "I'm not alone," she sneers. My eyes sweep the empty courtyard. "Sorry. Didn't realize you could see ghosts." Then I say more gently, "Look, I'm sure Mariko would—" "I don't want her seeing me like this," Blue blurts out, blinking rapidly as tears keep coursing down her cheeks. "There's no shame in being upset," I tell her and take a step closer. "What's wrong? Was it the execution?" She turns away, shakes her head. "The attack." "At the theater?" She nods jerkily. "Is your father all right? Did something happen? A laugh spurts from her lips. The sound snaps through the quiet, a bit of bark that sends tingles down the backs of my arms. Oh, he's fine. Not that he checked if I was. Not that he cares. I'm sure he cares, Blue. He's your father. Her voice pitches. All that means is I'm a pawn to use in his game. He only cares about rising through the ranks of the court. Giving me to the king was just a step to secure his promotion. She lets out another mad laugh. I'm the only one of us with parents in the palace, and they haven't visited me once. I'm so sorry. I say, reaching for her shoulder, but she shrugs my hand away. I don't need your pity, Nine. It's not pity, I retort, my face hot. It's understanding. I scrunch my hands. Gods, why are you like this all the time? You're so adamant to put yourself apart from the rest of us when we're all going through exactly the same thing. The rest of us are trying to look after one another, but you keep trying to divide us. Blue's top lip peels back. We're not going through the same thing. It's nothing similar. Are you or are you not stuck here, forced to serve a man you don't care about? You don't get it at all, she says in such a low hiss I barely catch it. What don't I get? The difference is, you aren't expected to like it. She clamps her lips together, jerking her head stiffly to one side. I have a family here, a father who is important in the court. I can't go around refusing the king or speaking out against being a paper girl. And I keep thinking, maybe now I've been chosen. Maybe now my father is one step closer to his promotion. He'll finally be happy with me. Her voice cracks. I've done everything he asked. Been the perfect daughter. But from the way my parents act, most of the time you wouldn't even know they have one. Oh, Blue. I breathe. But she backs away, her wet cheek shining in the moonlight. If you dare. If you tell anyone about this. I won't. I promise. And I mean it. But she pushes past me, as though I were the one threatening her, leaving me alone with the eerie hush of the empty barrels and the rustle of wind through the swaying bamboo. 27. On the outside, life in the palace returns to normal in the weeks after the executions, the only main change for us being that we aren't allowed beyond Paper House without an escort of at least one guard. With the arrival of winter, the air grows icy, the wind hard and biting. Colors drain from the gardens like calligraphy paints being washed away. Since the executions, an air of unease has hung over the palace, and it seems a premonition somehow, all this gray and whiteness. A reminder that more death is to come. But while I continue to go dutifully with the other girls to classes and dinners, just as I had been doing all these months before, on the inside, everything is different. With the increased security within the palace, everyone in Women's Court has been advised against leaving their rooms after nightfall. Even better, the king hasn't called for any of us in over a month, too busy with his hunt for the assassin's supporters and rumors of a dark new project that I suspect is just code for too much liquor. And as the days become shorter and the nights longer, this all gives Ren and me the cover we need to love each other in the dark. As often as we can, we sink into the immediacy of our bodies moving together. Our lips, fingertips, the hungry press of our thighs. Over the nights, I learn how to lick the curving slopes of her skin, the way it makes her shudder when I run my tongue down the ridge of her spine. And even though I soon get used to Ren's body, I never lose any of the enjoyment, the wonder. With every kiss, the pleasure is instant, a flood of heat, a fiery rush. With every kiss, it consumes us. In our first Qi arts lesson, Master Tekoa told us that mastering control of our internal energy is about understanding the concept of nowhere. Two words hidden inside the one, now and here. When we practice Qi arts, he said, what we're really trying to do is to ground ourselves into the here and now. That being truly in the present means to disappear. But with Ren, it's the very opposite. Instead of disappearing, she makes me feel reappeared, reimagined. Her touch shapes me, draws out the boldness that had been hiding in my core. Where the king's touch closed me, shut me down, Ren's opens me up. When I'm with her, every part of me is weightless and free, a soaring rush igniting my veins with desire as bright as sunlight. Her kisses heal the parts of me that the king broke. They tell me, you are strong, Lei. You are beautiful. You are mine. And, always, most important, you are yours. Because these kisses, these stolen nights with Ren, are the only thing I've had control of since coming to the palace. And it gives me satisfaction to know there are some things even the king does not have the power to stop. It builds my confidence that one day we'll be able to rebel with more than just our bodies and our love, that we will find a way to turn our growing hope and bravery into action. Desire cannot be tamed, the king told me that night in his chambers. Well, he's got one thing right. We might be paper girls, easily torn and written upon. The very title we're given suggests that we are blank, waiting to be filled. But what the demon king and his court do not understand is that paper is flammable. And there is a fire catching among us. A month and a half after the executions, the king finally begins to summon us again. Blue is first. After that night in the bathing courtyard, I can't help but feel sorry for her, knowing what I know about her now. But any pity I have is tempered by my relief at neither Ren nor me being called. These last few weeks have been a refuge. The two of us safe in the sanctuary of each other's arms, the spherical world of our small, secret geography. I always knew it was just an illusion of safety. A temporary reprieve. But I wasn't prepared for the fresh shot of fear at the moment the illusion is broken. After that, the names click by, each bamboo chip delivered by royal messenger, a countdown to the inevitable. Chenna Ji, Jen Ji, Aoki Ji, Mariko Ji, Jin Ji. Ren Ji. As is custom, Ren has to stay behind after her name is announced for the preparations. We're in Mistress Iara's suite. Winter sunshine streams in through the open doors to her garden, glancing off the half-empty plates and bowls on the table. I meet Ren's eyes, struggling to keep my expression level. While the world is bright around her, she has her back to the doorway, so her face is shadowed. The corners of her lips lift the tiniest fraction, more a grimace than a smile. And I get the strange idea that she's apologizing for something. Then she turns aside as Mistress Iara asks the rest of us to leave. Numb, I get to my feet. Someone nudges my shoulder. Come on, Aoki says. We have to go. I've been staring. Sure, yes, sorry. With one last hopeful look at Ren, who doesn't return it, I follow Aoki out of the room. She seems a bit different, don't you think? Aoki murmurs as we walk down the corridor, the other girls chatting ahead of us. Ren, I mean. I hardly hear her, too busy trying to breathe normally, to force thoughts of Ren and the king from my mind. Oh? How so? Just... she doesn't seem as focused anymore. Aoki throws me a sideways glance, slowing her pace. You must have noticed. Has she said anything to you? Not really. I guess it's just the stress of everything. Maybe she's homesick. Aoki nods, though she's still watching me with an odd expression. Some of the girls think she might be sneaking off at night to meet with the man. I push out a laugh that I hope sounds disbelieving, but from the way Aoki doesn't react, I can tell she doesn't believe it. I tuck my hair behind my ears and carry on walking a little faster now. Which girls? And why would they even think that? Jin says she saw her the night she was coming back from the king. Ren was leaving her room. She didn't seem to be going to the toilet or to the maid's dormitory, because that's the direction Jin was coming from. Maybe she couldn't sleep. Apparently she had shoes on, and an overcoat, like she was going outside. So she just needed some air. In the cold? Aoki's nose wrinkles. At 3 in the morning? With the guards outside? She stops me with her arm. I know you're close with her, Lei. But Ren is hiding something. I'm certain. I don't want you getting caught up in it.
If only she knew.
But I manage a nod. I palm my hands on the skirt of my robes and stride onward, resting my face into an unfazed expression. Thanks for telling me. I'll ask her about it tonight. Tomorrow. I'm sure there's a simple explanation. That night, as I wait for Ren to return, the hours crawl by. Every second is a slow, pulling agony. I pace my room so many times that my vision spins, the floor seeming to careen sideways, and I eventually have to sit down before I faint. When footsteps finally sound in the corridor, I wait a few moments more before going to Ren's room. I don't mean to surprise her. I thought she'd have known I'd come. But I've only just slid the door shut behind me when she shoves me painfully against it, an arm across my neck, her eyes wide and alert. She releases me immediately. Lei, I'm so sorry. Blowing out an exhale, she circles her arms around my waist, dipping her forehead to mine. Her breath is sweet and warm on my skin. I'm just on edge tonight. I didn't realize it was you. How was it? I ask, tentatively shifting back. She avoids my eyes. He was... rough. More so than usual. I wince, and she carries on quickly. But I expected he might be like this. The attack has exposed his vulnerability. He's angry. He's trying to reassert some of the power he's lost. So the rumors are true? I say. The assassins were helped from within the court? She nods. I heard that he arrested 11 officials on suspicion of being involved with the attack just this morning. He's out for blood. Hasn't he had enough already? In the dark, Ren's eyes seem to flare as she answers huskily. Not nearly. Gently, I help her out of her clothes She's wearing a tangerine-colored ruken set with jewels, a slit running up the length of one side of the skirt. But as I pull her robes off, I discover that the slit isn't a part of the design. The skirt has been slashed clean in two. Only a makeshift knot at its waist was holding it up. I swallow, a prickly sensation creeping across the back of my neck. The sky is clear tonight, a moonbeam slanting into the room. By its light, I make out the dark blossoms of bruises on Ren's skin. There's one on her shoulder, more along her hips, a huge handprint wrapped around her throat. I stare at them, heart wild. Anger charges through me so forcefully I almost retch. "How dare he?" I snarl. Ren grabs my hands. "Don't waste your thoughts on him," she says, lifting my fingertips to her lips. "But, Lei, please, at least not tonight, not now. I can handle pain. It's only temporary. And Madame Himura will have a shaman heal me tomorrow." I gape at her. "Do you realize how sick that sounds? Dear shamans, won't you please give us some magic so we can go back to the king and get broken all over again?" Ren kisses my hand softly. "No one said anything about breaking." We lie down and draw the blankets over us. Moonlight slivers Ren's face, draws a sharp outline along the line of her cheekbone and the hollow of her neck. My fingers trace it down to the upward roll of her shoulder. "Some of the girls are suspicious of you," I say. "Aoki told me earlier. Jin saw you leaving your room at night, and they think you might be going to meet someone. A lover. You have to be more careful, Ren."
Her brow wrinkles.
"They don't know where I'm going. Neither do I."
"Lei."
"I know," I say before she can finish. "You're trying to protect me."
"You say it like it's a bad thing."
I sigh. "It's just, I'd prefer it if you let me decide whether to be protected or not." My thumb skims her shoulder, sloping up into the warm dip of her neck. "Maybe I can handle it. Whatever you've got going on, maybe I could help." Ren closes her eyelids. Tiredly, she takes my hand and moves it to cup her cheek, her palm on top of mine. She opens her eyes. In the moonlight, they are bright, the opposite of her voice when she whispers. "You can't. Not with this. No one can." I want to press her more, but remembering what she went through tonight, the thought of it makes bile fly up my throat. I stop myself. Pulling her close, I burrow my nose in her skin, drawing her cool ocean scent into my lungs. She smells like home, like happiness and safety and hope and love. I want so much in that moment to tell Ren how I feel, to offer her the words that come to my lips every time she kisses me now, every time she even looks my way. But I wait too long, and my courage fades. Instead, I murmur, "Can you imagine a world where we're free to be with each other?"
"Actually," she replies after a pause, "I can."
"Then take me there, Ren, please."
She answers so quiet I barely hear it.
"I will."
I leave her room shortly after, so full of the glowing thrum being with Ren brings, and the promise in her words, that a smile lifts my lips. So when I meet Aoki's eyes, where she's watching from her own doorway, half wrapped in shadow, arms rigid at her sides, it takes a few seconds for the giddy look to drop from my face.
Perhaps, if I'd not been smiling, I'd have been able to hide it. I could have said we were just talking, the same way Aoki and I still do some nights, though admittedly not as often recently. But I know that she realizes the truth the minute she sees my expression. It's how she looks when she talks about the Demon King. Radiant. Lit from within. Without a word, Aoki pivots on the spot and slams the screen door shut behind her. The sound has bite in the quiet of the hallway. I lurch after her, not caring in that moment who might hear. She backs away as I enter her room, and I falter, stung. The look on her face, I never would have believed she could look at me that way. "Please, Aoki," I say, my throat narrowing. You can't tell anyone. Her laugh is hollow. The scowl warping her mouth makes her look ugly, so unlike my sweet friend, the girl whose laughter lifts my soul like sunshine. She usually seems so young, full of lightness, her insides practically effervescent. But there's something about the way she's holding herself right now, as if she'd aged years in the blink of an eye. "Is that how little you think of me?" she says, and there's hurt in her voice too. "I thought we were friends, that we told each other everything." "How could I have told you about this?" I cry, flinging my arms wide. "I know how close you are with the king. You wouldn't approve." "Of course I wouldn't. We're paper girls. We're not meant for anyone else." My fingers tighten into fists. "He made that choice for us. How is that fair?" "It's not about fairness. It's about duty." "Gods, you sound just like Madame Himura." "Good," Aoki flings back. "That means I'm doing my job well." I scowl at her. "No, it means you're not thinking for yourself." Aoki stiffens, anger rising from her like heat shimmer on wet stones. Her eyes are fierce, and I realize what she's going to say a second before she speaks. "I love him." The sentence hits me with a physical weight. Silence stretches between us. A dark, pulsing thing. I just about get the words out. "You hated him once."
"I didn't know him then,"
Aoki softens, voice curling like a sleeping cat's tail, and she kneads her hands in front of her, wide eyes glowing in the dark.
"He's good to me, Lei. Kind and caring and fair. He's even said he'll consider making me his queen if I continue to please him."
I almost choke. "His queen?" Her cheeks flush, then she shrinks back.
"You don't think I'm good enough for the throne?"
"No, that's not it."
"Because he could if he wanted to. Instead of a demon queen, he could have a paper queen. I could be his wife."
My jaw slackens. Scenes from the past few months plow into me one after the other. Aoki's eyes brightening when she talks about the king. What she told me that night at the Koyo celebrations. Her excitement at the executions. The look on her face every time the bamboo chip arrives and her name isn't the one on it. Like mine for Ren, Aoki's love for the king has been building over the months. I've just been so wrapped up in my own feelings that I didn't realize it. I'm supposed to be her best friend, and I didn't even notice she was falling in love with a monster. It takes me a while before I can speak. I lift my chin, looking her straight on. "You're too good for him. You deserve more."
"More?"
Her irises are shiny.
"What could be more than being his queen?"
After all the words we've thrown at each other, the silence that follows is horribly loud. It grows, stretches, spirals out, a physical distance, building feet and miles and whole countries and lifetimes between us, between me and the pure, beautiful girl who once blushed at the mention of just a kiss and worried that she wouldn't be enough for the king. I should go, I say eventually in a constricted voice. I wait in case she disagrees with me, but her expression is just as defiant as before. I turn to the door, eyes prickling. As my hand lifts to slide it open, her voice sounds behind me. You really love her? There's a flash of the Aoki I knew in her voice. Tender, compassionate. I spin round. Yes, I reply eagerly, offering her a smile. I step forward.
Oh, Aoki, I'm so sorry. You shouldn't.
The rest of my sentence tumbles away. In an instant, coldness returns between us, as jolting as a wave of ice water. Her look is so hard, it's painful to hold. And I falter back toward the door, one arm wrapped across my chest, like a shield. At least I chose who I fell in love with, I say roughly. As soon as it's out, I want to take it back. But I can tell by the look on Aoki's face that it's too late. And I hurry from her room before I make it even worse. Tears blurring my eyes as something splinters deep in my chest. 28. Screaming wakes me the next day. Instead of the usual gong, and too early, the dark still shivering with almost burnt-out candles and traces of moonlight on the floor. A horrible raw sound that tears through the night on broken wings, not even screaming. Wailing. Wild and untamed. The sound is close. It's accompanied by shouting, sharp words, and the rap of talons on the floor. Madam Himura. Something is happening to one of the girls. That's my first thought. My second is, Ren. I lurch outside, sucking in a hiss at the coldness of the floorboards on my bare soles. The other girls are already up, looking out from their doorways, faces tight with apprehension. From the room opposite, Aoki meets my eyes, before quickly turning her cheek.
Please,
a girl screams.
It won't happen again, I promise.
Halfway down the corridor, Mariko is sprawled on the floor. The robe of her nightdress hangs open, revealing the heavy curves of her breasts, the pale flesh of her legs. She struggles, hanging on to where Madam Himura is gripping her hair to drag her down the hall.
Let's just hear what she has to say,
Mistress Iara pleads. She's crouching, trying to get between Mariko and Madam Himura. The eagle woman swings out with her cane.
You're too soft on them, Iara, she snarls,
and Mistress Iara doubles over as a cane cracks across her back.
I told you before, when Lei refused the king. You show them the slightest bit of leniency, and this is how they repay you.
Blue,
Mariko cries. Her eyes are crazed as she seeks her out of the watching faces.
Blue, help me.
Blue stiffens in her doorway. A glimmer of something passes across her face, but she doesn't move. Ren steps forward instead.
Madam Himura,
she asks steadily. What is Mariko being punished for? Madam Himura's yellow eyes flare.
For being a slut. She was found by one of my maids last night. Legs spread for a soldier.
I'm reminded suddenly of Ren's words that night in the isolation room. She said that the guard outside my room had slipped away to meet a girl. Was it Mariko?
I'm sorry.
Mariko sobs, her face splotchy and red.
I won't do it again.
Of course you won't, Madame Himura retorts, because you're never coming back to the palace.
Mariko freezes.
What do you mean?
A wheezing laugh escapes Madame Himura's throat.
You think you can defy the king in such a way, and an apology is all that's needed to make up for it? Foolish girl.
I wince, instinctively reeling back as she turns her attention to the rest of us. She glares around with her cutting eyes. The layered feathers on her human-like arms ruffle open as they spread into the beginning of wings, making her seem twice her usual size.
Come, the rest of you, she commands coolly. You're about to discover what happens to paper that turns rotten.
Using her wings to steady herself against Mariko's struggles, she drags Mariko down the corridor. With no choice but to follow Madame Himura's orders, I pad behind them with the rest of the girls and our maids. Mariko's maid, a plump, dog-form girl called V, is sobbing so hard she has to stuff her hands over her mouth to muffle the sound.
It's all right,
Lil whispers, helping her along.
It'll be all right.
She looks up, meeting my eyes where I'm watching over my shoulder, and it hits me that it's the first time I've ever heard her lie. We trail Madame Himura to an empty room. She throws Mariko down the minute she gets inside.
Get Dr. Uol,
she directs one of the maids as we file in with reluctant steps. Mariko thrashes on the floor.
Please,
she begs.
I can't leave. Not before I see Karim. Where is he? Where did you take him?
Madame Himura glares down her hooked beak nose.
Your soldier is being dealt with by General Ndezi. He'll be stripped of his title and banished from the palace. That's if the king is feeling generous.
Mariko dissolves into wails.
I can't watch this.
I breathe to Ren next to me. We have no choice, she replies.
I don't care.
I take a step forward. Ren hisses at me, but I ignore her, rounding on Madame Himura. Why can't we take lovers? I ask her loudly, throwing out an arm. The king has his pick every night, and when we leave, there'll just be a new set of girls for him to play with. Her eyes widen.
What did you say?
Maybe if the king weren't such a cruel, disgusting excuse of a leader, we wouldn't look for comfort elsewhere. Though I knew it was coming, the crack of her cane still takes my breath away. I double over, clutching my jaw. The metallic tang of blood fills my mouth. Ren pulls me back before Madame Himura can strike me again, but her attention is distracted just then by the doctor's arrival. Dr. Uo looks as though he'd just woken up. His robes are mussed, his hair matted.
What's going on?
He asks, scratching at one curving boar tusk, blinking out from behind his round spectacles. Madame Himura points to Mariko.
This girl has forfeited her place in the palace. She must be branded.
The doctor's expression is as blank as when he was inspecting me.
I see.
Mariko scuttles away as he crouches down in front of her.
Someone hold her still,
he commands, and I'm thrown back to the assessments shortly after I arrive. The helplessness I felt as the doctor stripped me. I massage my jawbone, smearing blood across my sleeve. Madame Himura waves at the waiting maids.
Help the doctor.
They move forward reluctantly. Mariko lashes out when they get close, catching Lil in her ribs with an elbow. At once, Madame Himura whirls forward and slaps Mariko so hard it sends her cheek into the floor with a sickening crunch.
"Struggle all you want, girl," she spits. "You're just going to make the scarring worse."
It's not until the next moment, when Dr. Uo takes a knife from his bag, that I understand what is happening. The doctor holds Mariko's face still.
"Someone quiet her,"
he orders as she starts to scream. A maid brings over a wad of fabric. The doctor stuffs it into her mouth, muffling her cries. He raises the blade to her forehead. The first incision heightens her shrieking, but by the last, her sobs are silent. When he finally moves away, I see the bloody strokes of the character cut into Mariko's forehead. Lan. Rotten.
"Now everyone will know what you did,"
Madame Himura hisses. She turns to us.
"Remember this. Anytime you think you can defy the king."
Her eyes land on me.
"You will not get away with it."
Then she flaps an arm, barking.
"Back to your rooms. You have classes to get to. Don't think this has changed any of your duties."
I hesitate, and Ren draws me away.
"Don't push it," she whispers. "What'll happen to her?"
I ask in a weak voice as we head down the corridor. The rest of the girls are silent. As Blue shoves past her, practically running, Chenna stares down at the floor, her lips forming silent prayers. Jen and Jin walk hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder. I try to catch Aoki's eyes, but she's staring glassily ahead, absently picking at the sleeves of her robes.
"Mariko's marked now,"
Ren explains under her breath. "She won't ever be able to get a job, be married. She'll either starve to death or find work in the only places that'll take her."
"Prostitution houses?"
She nods, and I press my lips tight, battling the urge to retch. When we get back to our rooms, I knock on Blue's door. She doesn't answer, but I go in anyway. She's standing by the window staring out. Morning light filtering through the half-drawn shutters frames her outline in pale gold. There's something so painful about the stiff way she's holding her body, as though to keep herself together. As though she'd fall apart, literally, piece by piece, limb by limb, joints unraveling in an inelegant dismantlement, if she released herself even the tiniest fraction.
"Blue,"
I start. She interrupts, quiet.
"Go away."
Her voice breaks on the words. She repeats it louder with a jerk of her neck.
"Go away."
"I'm here," I say, moving closer. "I just wanted you to know. If you ever need to talk or anything, I'm here." Blue spins round, her face streaked with tears, her eyes manic.
"I said go away," she shrieks and lurches toward me.
I stumble out, not stopping until I get back to my room. Inside, I stagger to the window and gulp in air, fingers shaking where they're twined around the latticed woodwork. It takes me a long time to get my breathing to slow, and even then, I can still hear the ghost of Mariko's screams. That night, I write home. For months, I've kept my letters positive, cracking jokes as if it were just another day in the herb shop. But tonight, I can't do it. Outside, the wind howls, making the building creak and groan. There's a growl of thunder in the distance. Winters are even harder in Cienzo, and I picture my father and Tien in the garden, wrapped in furs, as they brush frost off our dying plants with frozen fingers, their breath curling before them. It's not right, I should be there. I should be with them, my own fingers chilled, my own exhalations making clouds in the air. It takes me a while to come up with a way to express myself in the letter without giving too much away. But I get it right on the third attempt. I have no idea if my father and Tien will even read this. I've still not heard a thing back, despite writing regularly all this time. And if I'm honest with myself, I know why. It's not hard to notice how Mistress Iara evades my questions whenever I ask her about the letters. Still, something keeps me writing. Maybe it's the feeling of connecting with my father and Tien, even just in my imagination. Or the knowledge that this is my last link with home. And if I stop writing, it's like acknowledging that I've given up hope of ever returning. Tonight, my letter is short. Dear Baba, do you remember that day we went to the stream where you found Bao and we stayed until sunset, our toes dipped in the water, the air so still and quiet, and there was just that one lonely bird singing? Well, today's been just about as good as that day. Missing you more than ever. All my love, Lay. Tears cloud my eyes as I roll the letter closed. That day was the first anniversary of the raid in our village that stole Mama away. It was one of the worst days of my life. I'm just about to lie down when I sense movement in the hallway. And somehow, I know it's Ren, leaving Paper House. Anger hurtles down my veins, so sudden and strong it surprises even me. I jump to my feet. How dare she? How dare she? Of all the days, when she knows exactly what could happen to her if she's found out. What that would do to me. I wait as long as I can bear before following her. Wind lashes my skin as I charge across the dark gardens. The air is frozen. Before I left, I threw a heavy brocade coat over my nightdress, but my feet are bare, the frosted ground numbing my toes. My hair whips around my raw cheeks. It takes me longer than I anticipated to reach the pine forest where I've seen Ren disappear to before. I trudge through it, keeping to a straight line in the hopes that it's the right direction. After a few minutes, I start to worry that I won't be able to find her. But as I pick my way over mossy roots and brambles of thorns, sounds rise from up ahead. Half hidden under the noise of the wind, I make out grunts, panting, the crush of leaves. Something dark and awful flares to life in my belly. It couldn't be. Could it? A few seconds later, I emerge into a clearing. The long trunks of pines close in tight, a leafy canopy overhead. And in its center, Ren and the wolf. Not doing what I feared, but something else. Something worse. Fighting. My heart bounces to my throat. I'm about to dash forward to tackle him off her when I notice how none of their blows are followed through. Just quick contact to indicate they've landed. Their movements seem practiced and familiar, dance-like almost. Ren's hair flies around her as she ducks a sweeping kick. She retaliates with a jab of her hands, the wolf's powerful haunches propelling him back. They're training. Just then, Ren makes a leaping turn and spots me. Her eyes are the same icy white as that night under the theater. It takes a second for them to drain back to their usual fawn brown. She lands messily, but is upright at once, brushing down her clothes. "Lay," she says, breathless, starting forward. The wolf looks around. His ears prick when he sees me, and with a whip of his gray-white tail, he flies around, but Ren grabs him.
Wait, she shouts. It's all right, Kenzo.
She shouldn't be here, he growls.
She won't tell.
How do you know?
I just know.
How is that?
Because I love her.
Ren's shout is almost swallowed by the wind, but her words reach me as clearly as if she'd bent to whisper them in my ears.
Everything seems to still.
The growl of the incoming storm, the sway of the trees in the wind. Our eyes catch across the clearing. Ren's look, vividly fierce and beautifully soft at the same time, wrenches something inside me.
I feel her heartbeat, as if we were pressed together, chest to chest, cheek to cheek.
I know its beat as surely as my own. She expels a shaky breath, her face softening.
And, she says quietly, turning to Kenzo, I think she loves me too. So yes, I trust her. We can trust her.
Kenzo is still glaring at me. Ren tugs on his arm, half-human, half-furred, muscled wolf. His lips uncurl, hiding his fanged canines. But his ears are still pointed, the tendons in his neck corded.
So that's how it is,
he says, breath furling from his long, muzzle-like jaw.
Well, she still shouldn't be out here.
Ren nods.
Give us a minute.
With a last, terse look my way, the wolf turns on his heels and bounds into the forest. Ren crosses the clearing. In an instant, my anger fades. Tears are wetting my face before she's even reached me, and she frowns, thumbing them away.
Lay,
she says, her gaze moving over my face.
What's wrong? Is it what happened to Mariko?
I curl into her arms.
Everything,
I say thickly. She holds me close, waiting until my breaths finally calm. Then she draws back, palms cupping my face.
What you said,
I mutter, my cheeks warm under the heat of her palms and the sweet softness of her look.
Just then, to Kenzo, did you... Do you?
I do, she whispers. My breath catches.
Me too.
Her lips part, a sigh escaping them. Gently, she presses her mouth to mine. Then she steps back.
I'm sorry, Lei, but you have to get back to the house.
It's not safe for you to be here. I scrub my tears away with the back of my hands.
I'm not going anywhere, I tell her. Not before you tell me what's going on.
As she starts to protest, I shake my head and wind my fingers through hers, pulling her closer.
You're risking everything. Your life and mine. Because if anything happens to you, I don't know how I'll cope. You're all I have, Ren. I need you.
You have me, Lei.
So tell me. No more lies.
Our gazes are fixed together, and for a moment this is all my world is, the feel of Ren's presence, closer than a heartbeat, and the brilliant, deep brown of her soft-centered eyes. I squeeze her fingers.
It's time.
She regards me in silence. Then finally, she nods.
Everything I've told you so far is true.
She begins, gripping my hands.
I promise. But I've never told you why. Why Ketai rescued me and brought me up as a Hano. Why I'm here in the palace.
She wets her lips.
Because when my father went to the Mountains of Rain, following the rumors of the Shah's massacre, he wasn't just searching for survivors. He knew there'd be survivors, or rather, that there'd be one
She loosens a long breath.
Me.
The night of the massacre.